Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, March 10th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
Will you marry me?
Maybe we can discuss this later. Okay, so here's the deal. As you know, I'm all about bringing you the very best interviews I can for all of my podcast series. So, not too long ago, I hooked up with this exceptional author who I think is absolutely perfect for the Erotic Mind podcast series. But midway through our conversation, I realized that we are discussing stuff that would fit equally well in my Sex Wisdom series.
Will you marry me?
So, what am I supposed to do but officially declare that we have our very first twofer? Allow me to introduce you to Jesus Angel Garcia, the remarkable author of the multimedia novel Bad, Bad, Bad. His novel can be read on so many levels. Those looking for a very engaging and smutty erotic story will not be disappointed. However, his work is also infused with profound insights into the philosophy and psychology of why we are sexual. Getting to the marrow of this man and his complex novel is sheer delight. You won't want to miss this, my friends.
A man who can't control his woman is funny.
You're just not going to stop, are you? Listen, adding to the sexual tension of today's show, Jesus reads from Bad, Bad, Bad. He also invites you to visit him on his site, badbadbad.net. You'll discover that his is the first novel to come with its own YouTube playlist. Today's podcast is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack.
I mean, a man owes his marriage to a woman, he should kneel down.
I so agree. Listen, for those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight. Thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy material called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? Not sure you know what in Sam hell I'm talking about? Well then, it's high time for you to mosey on over to either the Fleshlight or Fleshjack site and make the discovery on your own. Look for the banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be so glad you did. And ladies, here's a tip. This is the perfect gift for your man. You know how I keep talking about the mutual joys and the important information shared when a couple masturbates together, right? Well, this is the ideal masturbation toy for him. Check it out and see for yourself. I know you will agree, nothing beats a Fleshlight. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Jesus, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm totally stoked that we finally have this time to spend together. I'm honored to be in such provocative company.
Well, thanks.
I'm going to charge you for that, don't you know? Would you like to say hello to the nice people? They're all dying to meet you.
Hello, nice people.
And you know there's some perverts out there, too, so you better say hello to them as well.
Well, they're nice people, too.
That's what you think. Oh, my God.
So, non-judgment, Richard, non-judgment.
Yeah, that would be my mantra. So I have to ask, how does a nice person with such a heavenly name like Jesus Angel come to write such a devilishly profane book like Bad, Bad, Bad? Do you think baby Jesus and the angels are weeping?
Well, I think Jesus understands. I kind of feel like Jesus doesn't believe in organized religion.
Yeah, I would think not.
You know, my
look what a mess they've made of things.
Exactly. Jesus was not into the religion. My father, on the other hand, he's not allowed to read my book, so
Okay.
he would be doing more than weeping if he did. So,
So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
Okay, I will burst whenever I get the feeling.
So look out, folks. I don't know if there's going to be any warning, but we'll see what we can do. So let's begin at the beginning. Is Jesus Angel Garcia your nom de plume, or your nom de erotica, or nom de smut, as the case may be? And if it is, can you tell us why you decided to use a pseudonym?
Yeah, it is a pen name. I have a conservative day job, conservative career, and part of the various communities that I spend my time in is on the conservative side. Because I love my career and I like that work and that community as well, I figured, some people don't read so well, so I didn't want people misreading this book and then coming after me, and you never know, enemies are lurking. So I figured that's why I had to do it under the
won't tell anyone that your real name is Rick Santorum, huh?
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be a hoot and a holler? Oh my God. I would scoop everyone.
It would.
This is wonderful. So but how did you come up with Jesus Angel Garcia?
Well, at this point it's hard to remember, but I think the original idea was that the main character on the book kind of goes in this downward spiral. And so I was thinking of that as a jag. And so his name was Jag, and then his name evolved into Jesus Angel Garcia, and then it just made sense as I was considering how am I going to come out as the author, so to speak, because the book's written in first person. It made sense to me to just adopt that name, because then it kind of plays around with that idea. People read it, or even just a little bit, people who've read it so far, or people who hear about it, they want to know, is this about you? Or it freaks them out even more if they think that it's kind of, towing that line between memoir and fiction. Right. And I like that. I like that idea.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I think that's fascinating. I mean, I was among that group of people.
Exactly. It just makes it read a little more, you tell me, what does it do for you thinking that the author is the narrator?
Well, I mean, it's seamless, first of all. I don't know you from Adam, other than what I've read. But I mean, you do it so extraordinarily well, and it's completely believable. It's not like this amazing creation where it's just like, oh, that's absolutely impossible. I mean, these are believable people believable situations, and the name I couldn't have come up with a more perfect one. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Good. Well, thanks. No, I'm glad. And then there's also this whole, there's many, I hope there's multiple ways you can read the book, like on different layers and levels. And you could definitely read it on a certain just page turning level. Yeah. And then there's other ways that you can interpret and put kind of symbolism and things together. Right. And there is this whole, religious thing going on, and this symbolic, meaning to the names and to kind of the way the whole situation plays out that I'm not gonna spell out or speak about anymore, but it's there, and it's pretty I guess it's kind of twisted, so I like that.
I love it. So you call your novel a multimedia novel. What in the world does that mean? I mean, do I actually need to readjust my reading glasses or what?
You may have to. I'm envisioning this book as a kind of literary audio-visual mashup. So I see, the book, the words on the page or the words on a screen, if you're going to read it as an ebook, I see that as one element of it. But there's also a huge musical music reference part in the book, and a lot of music in the book. So there's a whole on the website. There's a there's a playlist that I put together of tunes from the book from YouTube. So there's that where you can actually kind of track the book with the sound with the YouTube soundtrack that corresponds to chapters and corresponds to definitely kind of thematic or emotional development and stuff like that that's going on. There's also, I'm still working on these multimedia elements, but there's going to be an original music soundtrack that accompanies it, songs as well as instrumentals that are related to different stories in the book. There's going to be visual elements. I'm anticipating photo essays that are interpretations of different parts of the story, as well as videos. Some different ideas related to the themes of the videos, like a kind of mockumentary style thing. So I'm working on all these different elements, and then I hope to put it all together, and then it'll ultimately give choices to the people who are interested. So you could just get the book, but you could get, you know, a ton of different combinations of how you want to experience the book. And there's a lot of publishing is going through this revolution right now, and it's all very interesting and exciting. So I just want to be part of it, and I want to contribute to it in any way. And so I just figure the bigger, broader way of looking at it will, just create an experience that, depending on who you are and how you like to take in your art, you know, this might be a way to get it on lots of different levels.
Total immersion. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'd like to do.
That's the cool thing. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this before, so this is extraordinarily cutting edge, yes?
No, well, thank you. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, I can... There's definitely some people doing some other things that are inspiring me as I discover it, because I'm like, that's kind of like what I'm going to do, and and there's some things going on out there, but I haven't seen anything exactly or, you know, like what I'm doing, so that's kind of cool. And the other thing that I think is kind of funny is just going into this, the cynic in me is going, well, you know, readers don't read. There aren't any readers anymore anyway. Everybody's watching YouTube videos. So how do I get YouTube watchers to want to read the book? Oh, well, hey, here's a way I can do it. So that went into part of the thinking as well.
And besides, as you suggested a bit ago, that the whole publishing industry is undergoing a transformation.
Oh yeah.
I'm hoping for the better, because in the past, I don't think it has served, you know, the broader audience all that well. I mean, they tend to spend so much money on celebrity nonsense, and you know, other people languish who have actually really good things to contribute to the popular culture, and but you know, they can't get published because, you know, the big houses are, you know, wasting all their money on Sarah Palin and
they do. They want blockbusters.
You know,
they have this Hollywood mentality in the majors, and then even in the independents. You know, I'm currently shopping, looking for a print publishing partner, and I just wonder, even among the independents, I wonder how broad-minded, you know, everybody is. You know,
really?
Like everybody. Well, I think people develop their niche, and I think people are very. I don't want to make any kind of generalizations yet, but I'm just wondering as I look around, you know, it's a curious scene, but there are so many people doing so many amazing things. I'm just hoping I can find somebody who wants to kind of work with me on this. I don't have to do it all myself, but I will
absolutely.
If I have to.
Exactly. I mean, I'm painfully aware of this myself, and maybe it sounds like a little sour grapes on my part, but I wrote a manuscript 10 years ago called The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying. And it's very cutting edge.
Nice title.
Yeah, it is, I thought, anyhow. and it reflected the work that I was doing in San Francisco and continue to do a bit up here in Seattle. And I would send out the manuscript or, you know, a book proposal to find an agent or a publisher, and I'd get stuff back like, oh, this is so great, and this is so interesting, and this is a... And, oh, you've really done a terrific job, but we can't pick it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we just spent X amount of dollars on, you know, Dick Cheney.
Yeah, I've heard different excuses so far.
They're saying things like, well, we can't do, you know, Death and Dying kind of stuff because, you know, where's the market? And I said, Are you getting out of here alive?
Where's there not a market? You know,
you silly
way.
People.
Yeah, sex, death, and love. Those are the topics I'm most interested in.
Absolutely. So, I want to say something about your work, and this is something I read on your homepage. It says, "Meet Jesus Angel Garcia, a self-described good father and husband who gets reality slapped when his wife inexplicably flees with their infant son to the dirty south city of Gethsemane, South Carolina.
Yeah.
While battling for custody, he now has to figure out who he really is and how he should live his life, issues he has struggled with since childhood." So we've already discovered that the author, you, and the protagonist is not one and the same person necessarily, but you do write in the first person.
Mm-hmm. That I do.
And then you continue to say, "His search drives him to take on a precarious dual identity. By day, he works as the humble, God-fearing webmaster for the first church of the church, before the church, a born-again community eager to expand its ministry online. At night, he plays the part of a sexual messiah, servicing the needs of countless women he meets on fallenangels.net, an alternative social network for the fashionably dissed and franchised. And JAG fails to recognize that role play is a dangerous game when you don't know who you are."
So sounds like a trashy novel to me.
It does sound bad, doesn't it?
But it's not. It's not Pulp Fiction, despite appearances. Or is it?
But wait, there's more. No. So role-playing and the ambiguity of one's real self and one's real intentions are pivotal themes in your novel, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
No surprise, then, that the Internet is on the forefront of all of this, huh? I mean, we all can assume an alternate personality online. Was that purposeful?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I think about it, I guess, that's where I saw it, I think, vividly, and also experienced it vividly. So kind of the origins of the novel were based on some of my experiences there and the research I was doing as I started to get into this whole thing. It kind of started after the breakup of a long-term relationship, and I'd always been pretty much a serial monogamist since I was like a sophomore in high school. Mm-hmm. And so when I was single, like, almost for like the first time in my life as an adult, I got into it, and I was just kind of amazed by the breadth of the role play that was out there.
and so
I guess that's a nice way of putting it. And so
role play,
I was,
what a lovely way to say dishonesty.
So many levels, though. Like, yes, you could call it dishonesty in, like, say how people misrepresent themselves, right, on dating sites, but then you can also look at dishonesty that we have with ourselves in our conversation,
exactly,
with ourselves, and who are we, and how are we going to represent ourselves,
right,
and what are we looking for, and do we even know what we're looking for, and if we get what we think we're looking for, you know, do we really want it, or can we handle it,
yeah,
and you know, all that kind of stuff kind of came to the forefront of kind of my imaginative life as I was kind of living this, for real, like kind of investigating this stuff for real. And then it all just, you know, went from there.
Well, I think that's brilliant. Finally, you write, "As War Without End, a.k.a. the Initiative for Peace, rages in the background, and election season fear-mongering spurs panic among the masses, JAG begins to slack on his first church responsibilities while obsessing on the fallen angels, whose extreme desires challenge his moral values. But who am I to judge?" he tells himself, justifying his self-destructive behaviors as noble acts of redemption. Blinded by righteousness and addiction, he refuses to change his path, even as it leads to the greatest of sins. Dum, da, 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 da.
Yes, overdramatic. The book's less dramatic. I think the book, well, I mean, the book has a dramatic element, of course, but I think the book is less overdramatic than these synopsis is.
But they're wonderful. They're absolutely, this is what, you know, prompted me to approach you for this interview, because I think, who writes like this? This is
absolutely. And that might be the problem.
Is this man for real? Or what?
Oh, thanks.
So we'll get to more of what's behind your pseudonym in a bit, but right now I want to share with our audience your accomplishments as an author. You have so much religious imagery in your book. Were you in seminary at some point?
No comment. What I will say is I was once an altar boy.
Oh, really? You know, I was a priest.
Oh, you were a priest.
I am. Yeah, well, currently still am, but I'm not a practicing kind of one.
Yeah, yeah. No, well,
and for good reason. Because I got it down once. I don't need to practice anymore.
Yeah, exactly. No. That's all I'm going to say about that situation.
Dun. No. So, I would you be up for sharing a little tidbit?
Yeah.
Good.
Let me do that.
I'm all ears. We're all ears.
Okay, so let's see what we got here. It's funny because, you know, reading these different pieces, I've done some readings and, you know, I share pieces of the book with people whenever I get the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's different reactions from different people, you know, and it really underscores for me how we all have different tolerances or prejudices, I guess.
Right.
And so a lot of the idea of the book is to create this challenge for, or I guess the idea of the story is that there is this challenge for Jag. There is this story for the protagonist. There is this challenge for the protagonist that he's moving throughout the story, and it's also, I think, a challenge for the reader on different levels as he's doing this, because he continues to kind of spiral out of control get into more kind of complex or intense situations, and so. This particular scene that I'm going to read, it's kind of challenging for the protagonist, and it has been said to me that it is for some readers and listeners, but I'm not sure. Hopefully it's a little bit hot too. We'll see. So the situation is, he's just met this woman that he, or I guess it's their second date or something, or they have this fling, and he meets her on Fallen Angels, and so they're just lying down on the couch, and they're like watching TV or something, and she falls asleep. So here we are. I flexed in my jeans, harmless exercise, I told myself. After undoing my belt, I unsnapped the tops of the button fly to relieve scrunch. Black skirt was cotton. I rubbed up against the soft fabric, tentative at first, then with more conviction. I wondered if the pleasure would be the same if she were conscious. Smelling her body's response, I inched up her skirt. She wasn't wearing panties. I pulled down my jeans to get lengthwise between her cheeks. That's when her breathing shifted and I froze. She pushed back against me. "Hey, sweetie," she said. I reached around and with the palm of my hand brushed light circles on her nipple. She groaned, matching the rhythm of her hips with my own. I kissed her neck, traced my fingers across her lips, throat, breasts, and belly, working my way down between her thighs. She was hairless, her hood pierced with what felt like a tiny horseshoe. I tugged on it and she moaned. "Jag," she said, "touch my pussy." I loved how the word dripped off her dirty south tongue. "Don't you want to fuck my wet pussy?" I licked my fingers, stroked her lips, polished the hood ornament as if she were a Rolls Royce. "Want isn't the question," I said, gnawing on her earlobe. She twisted around to guide my finger up inside her. She was hot caramel. I reached for her sugar walls. "Listen," she said, gripping my wrist. "You can play my pussy like a piano." She pushed my other fingers inside her up to where I used to wear a ring. I could hear Mozart's Fantasia in D minor. Then she pressed the knuckle of my thumb, making a warhead of my hand, and shoved. When she yelled, I almost pulled out. "You okay?" "I'll always be okay," she said, clutching my forearm, ramming me into her up to my wrist. She screamed again, full voice, eyes thunderstruck. I gave her what she wanted, punching like a piston, afraid I was hurting her, but this was what she made me do. I gazed at her features, twisted beyond recognition, the face of ecstatic annihilation. I was awed by her desire, her self-knowing, her need, frightened by the beast she called to service within me.
Ooh, that's nasty. I love it. Well, I think that's the first thing, that's the first handballing depiction in this series.
So
you get a gold star, don't you know? That's amazing. That's brilliant.
Oh, well, thanks. It's and that kind of comes kind of early on, at least in the first third of the book. So for people
that have precipitously
probably
there.
Isn't the book for those people, and that's
So as you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. And generally, I ask the artist or author I'm chatting with some questions about what inspires him or her to draw or paint or write or whatever. But since you and your novel is so unique, I'd like to try something a little different. Are you game?
Absolutely.
Oh, you are tempting me. Anyhow, I have a notion that you have plenty to say about the more philosophical and psychological aspects of where human sexuality and fiction intersect. Am I right about that?
I don't know what to say now. What did I say? Maybe?
Maybe.
Yes? Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, why are you so interested in this, and are you disappointed that other erotic authors don't delve as deeply?
I think there's a rich space for exploration in this kind of stuff. I think so much comes out of and informs sexuality, sexual behavior, sexual identity, confusion, determination. I guess I'm interested in how personality is reflected through an individual's sexuality and society's attitudes towards sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Which as we know from studies of pornography, which, you know, pornography is more prevalent in the Bible Belt, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I think that there's a complexity there. There's a lot of hypocrisy there. There's a lot of twisted sensibility there. So, you know, I don't know. As far as the erotic writing goes, I guess it ranges. You know, from what I've seen, it can range from really superficial to pretty hot stuff to kind of deep psychological investigations. It was funny, I was on a blog called Fictionaut with a writer named Gina Frangello recently, and we were talking about some of this stuff. And can I read you a little bit of this dialogue?
Oh, please
that we
do.
Had?
Yes.
Okay, so I was having this dialogue on the Fictionaut blog with Gina Frangello, where she was talking about Milan Kundera and Mary Gateskill. And she was talking about using sex as character development and as a window to larger power struggles, and eroticism tinged with melancholy. And that's what I tried to do in part with my Bad, Bad, Bad novel. But I was talking to her about going on your podcast, and I was saying that the erotic elements in my story are a lot more about how sexual behavior or sexual acting out, let's say, reflects psychological wounds or a sense of loss or sorrow or struggle for affirmation or like a personal power grab, desperation, or reaction to a socio-political climate, which is a whole lot different than the hot, hot words for voyeuristic merriment. So I was asking her, I'm like, so how am I supposed to talk about this exploration of the erotic mind when, you know, in my vocabulary, I don't know if I would even call my work that necessarily. Mm-hmm. And she just said, oh, you just did. That's fine. That's the way to do it, you know? hopefully, you know, that's it. I mean, I don't even, you know, it's a complicated thing. I'm not sure. I use erotic elements and I use exploration of sexuality in the book, and there are some explicitly sex-laden imagery, explicitly intimate encounters, but those are just a part of this kind of larger exploration of some of the other themes.
And
so,
I think that's why this is such fertile territory in my estimation. I sometimes think that I catch a glimpse of the psychological underpinnings of some of the other authors that I've interviewed, but I may be just wishful thinking. I'm interested in why people are sexual. And, you know, like we just, exactly. not too long ago, we had Valentine's Day, and somehow, you know, our entire culture, you know, kind of boils down the whole sexual thing to an issue of love and intimacy between two people. And that's a little tiny itsy-bitsy part of what the rationale and reasons why people are sexual.
Sure.
And if you just stop at that, you miss this huge aspects of personal motivations for sexual expression.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the trick or the complication when you're writing about that stuff, though, is how do you make it so that, I guess, for one, a reader's going to go along with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess, too, at least for me, what I was trying to do is to make it explicit without being gratuitous.
Right.
You know,
right.
like to make it to be raw, but not just raw.
Right. And that's interestingly enough, is, you know, the line that a lot of people use to differentiate eroticism or erotica and pornography. And that it is not gratuitous. It is part of a whole, and you know it's situational and it's set in something, as opposed, and it's complex as opposed to pornographic. Not that there's anything wrong with that, mind you, but you know it's more of a, you know, this is the be all and end all of it.
What you see
is what you get.
No, I agree.
So, do you ever get people telling you to, you know, not get so deep, just tell us a good smutty story? Or do you find that people gravitate toward your work because it is a morality tale?
That's a good question. I don't know. Nobody's told me to do this or that yet.
That's good.
But I know...
Wait till you run into a publisher.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, some of the agents I've tried to hook up with, they'll say that they're really into the story and
right.
they really like the writing, but it's a little too, you know, intense or a little too raw for them or something like that. And so, you know, that definitely is a little bit of a red flag, but, you know, what are you gonna do, you know?
Exactly.
And I know some people have been turned off by the frankness of the narrative or maybe the occasional rawness of the language, but just as much as others have been turned on and,
exactly.
you know, found the humor and the psychological complexity that I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really this idea, I think, that, you know, the audience, people are either going to be into it or not. And that's cool. I think one thing that is that's going to work or just that this book is, at least, it's not a middle of the road. It's either I think people are either going to be into it or they're not going to be into it. I don't think, hopefully, either way, you can't really ignore it
you know? Is that, and to my mind, that's, you know, an indication of a great piece of art, it seems to me. I mean, there's not going to be universal appeal, and there's going to be some people who really, you know, think this is fabulous, and other people, you know, can, you know, walk onto the next gallery or whatever, or the next bookshelf. So the interesting thing is that it's authentic and that it's real and that, you know, it's certainly unique, obviously. So,
I was trying, you know.
Right. So I'm just looking at the clock and I see that, you know, our time is up for today, and I haven't even gotten nearly a big enough piece of you, so to speak, as it were, sir. So I'm going to beg you to come back next week and finish this conversation with me. Will you?
Absolutely, sure.
And in the meantime, we'll be touching ourselves impurely. All right?
That's great. You do that.
And in order to do that properly, we need to get your website address, and you could walk us around a little bit.
Oh, sure. My website address is badbadbad.net.
real easy
Walk you around the website, like what's on the
yeah,
website.
Yeah, what can we find there?
Let's see, what can we find there? Well, if I pull it up here, I can see that there is a homepage with that synopsis on it and, and the fun cover and some reader responses. So you can get, you know, an idea of some of the people who liked it. A page with a lot of stuff on it is called Page One, and that's got, like, kind of literary audio. Oh, there we go. That's it has a little music that comes up. There's some of the published excerpts are on there. There's some. There's a couple of videos of me reading.
Yes, which are very entertaining, I might add.
Oh, thank you. And that's where also the social networks are, where you can follow me on Twitter or friend me on Facebook, and that's a good way to kind of stay in touch about how things move forward. That YouTube playlist that I mentioned before is on here, and then there's a page where you can. You can buy stuff as it comes up. For right now, the book's just available as an ebook, as a PDF. But I'm going to be probably for readings and maybe limited edition through the website, depending on the demand, create some limited edition print copies maybe in the next month or so. So if people are interested, they can contact me also on the page. And then, you know, I can just let you know when that comes up if you prefer the old school book. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Outstanding, sir. And so between now and next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, what a great show, huh? Well, tune in next week for part two of my interview with Jesus Angel Garcia and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
On my knees, in front of all of these people, will you marry me?
Okay, but maybe just this once. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. Say, guys, have you been looking for the perfect gift for yourself? A gift that will give you hours of fun and pleasure and never run out of batteries? Well, I have just the thing for you. Once you've tried a Fleshlight, you'll never again settle for second best. You know how all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse? Well, here's a tip. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like, takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice with this puppy, you can last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old U.S. of A., so look for the Flesh Jack banner right there in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com.
I'll call you when I get to Mama's house.
Yeah, you do that. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe. Leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? That's even better. Over and out.